So, it's the last afternoon. And just a few reflections on working with this kind of practice at home. And I think one of the things I love most about this practice is that the instructions are no different than they are on retreat for practicing in our lives. We recognize awareness, we notice what's obvious, check into the attitude from time to time, and remember relaxation too as a support for the awareness. I think the big difference in practice on retreat and practice in daily life is the kinds of objects we have. And so it may be appropriate to be at different level of perception than it is on retreat, to be really aware of context. And so that's a big piece, I think, of practice that we do a little bit on retreat, is that kind of aware of context and how the context affects us. And I'll talk more about that in a bit. Another difference, I think, in practice on retreat and off retreat is that here on retreat, practice is your main job in some ways. It's like we have nothing else that is more important than practice. And I'd say in general, that's true in our lives. Really, that's true in our lives, but our minds put other things on top. And the way our lives work as lay people, we have responsibilities and things that we have to take care of. And very often our momentum and the way that we have navigated those responsibilities in the past, and we do need to take care of these things. We need to, as lay people, we need to have a job and earn money and go to the grocery store and pay our bills. And so there's some kind of very ordinary ways that we have to take care of ourselves as lay people. And the habits around those taking care is not to be mindful, generally. It's got some other motivations in there. And so we are kind of swimming against the stream there, against our habits. And yet, as we've been exploring here, there's nothing that we can't be mindful for. So it really is this curiosity of how can I be mindful here when we remember, and those get a little scattered in daily life, in our daily lives. And so the practice of the prompting mindfulness all day, and that got, for I think most of you, that got much more easeful as the retreat went on. It was much more becoming aware or being aware of the mindfulness that was there and kind of riding the mindfulness that's there, and not so much having to remind yourself all the time. But at the beginning, there was quite a bit of prompting of like, yes, I'm aware, and keep reminding ourselves. And that's some of the effort that we make in this practice. But so what I'd say on retreat, given, I mean, on in our daily lives, given our, you know, the jobs we have to do, the things we have to take care of, that takes a certain bandwidth of our mind to remember how to write the checks, what bills I have to pay, what groceries I need. You know, it just takes a certain kind of part of the mind to do that. And if the way that we think we have to cultivate mindfulness is through this prompting, we often give it up. And I've had many people say to me, I don't have time to be mindful in my daily life. And if the way that you're going about doing that is through this picking up the activity of reminding yourself to be mindful, or picking up the activity of directing the attention to something, that takes a certain kind of bandwidth of the mind also, and there can feel like there's a conflict there with the part of the mind that has to figure out what my grocery list is. And that's a pretty simple one, actually, but our minds, things are more complex, things get more complex. And so the picking up of mindfulness and having to prompt the mindfulness, that takes a certain amount of effort in our mental activity. And so if that's the only way we think of cultivating mindfulness throughout the day, often people give it up. It feels like you're carrying around a backpack. You're having to do this mindfulness. It feels kind of heavy. It doesn't feel very easeful. And so what I often encourage, and actually my own key practice in daily life, is noticing the moments of mindfulness returning. Attuning to that. We talked a lot about that on this retreat, recognizing the return of mindfulness, recognizing when it's there. Sometimes we don't actually see its return, but it's almost like we wake up and it's like, oh, I am mindful. It's not that I've seen it go from not there to there, but there's this kind of recognition, oh, mindfulness is here. And so that recognition of being mindful in that moment, it's a little tiny bit of effort in a way to kind of attune to that experience. But it is essentially the moments of mindfulness returning are the effortless moments. And when we kind of attune to that, when we attune to that experience of mindfulness returning, it's like that. And it's kind of just a curiosity. Okay, can I in this day, maybe setting the intention, so this is something to do at the beginning of a day perhaps, setting the intention, may I notice moments of mindfulness returning through the day? And then maybe you'll notice a few. Highlighting those, kind of familiarizing yourself with what it feels like for mindfulness to return random times in the day, when you're getting out of your car, when you're opening the refrigerator, when you're sitting down for a meal, when you're having a conversation with a coworker. Just mindfulness will return at these moments through our day. And getting familiar with that experience begins to attune the mind to that reappearing of mindfulness. And we start to recognize that it happens more than we thought it happened. This moment is effortless. It's not when we did, you know, not self. It's mindfulness returning. It is just a moment of grace, of mindfulness just appearing. But the familiarizing yourself with that experience allows your mind to recognize that it happens a lot. And then it starts to point itself out to you more and more and more through the day. And you get this almost like this little thread of just little moments, little spots of mindfulness through the day. And depending on what's happening for you in that moment, now, maybe, for instance, if you kind of have a moment of a return of mindfulness while you're driving a car, that you could, or taking a walk down a street, you could, in that moment, recognizing, oh, here's mindfulness, and recognizing, okay, well, you know, I'm just driving right now. I don't have to be planning. I don't have to be doing other things. So maybe I can pick up that reminding myself. Just maybe I can... Yeah, I'm aware of the seeing, aware of the hearing, aware of what's happening around me, aware of how I am in this moment. Maybe it will stay, maybe it will go, but so there can be at times in our day a little bit of reminding ourselves to be aware. But sometimes mindfulness arises like in the midst of an intense conversation with a coworker, and it's not necessarily possible, or it just feels like the trying to do that picking up of mindfulness or do that prompting of mindfulness would be heavy or feel too effortful. And so when I teach this, and I teach this kind of practice in a non-residential retreat about two or three times a year, well, about twice a year, I guess I teach it. It's a non-residential retreat at IMC. I often will suggest to people, just get on with your day. You know, just, oh, here's the moment of mindfulness. Notice what's here. That mindfulness has returned, how you are in this moment. But don't try to hold on to it. Don't try to keep prompting it. Just get on with your day. And this has been a key practice of mine for quite a long time. And what seems to happen is that, you know, there's more of those moments and it just, they accumulate. We sometimes get a little burst of mindfulness when one of those moments of mindfulness arises. Sometimes they last a little while. We get to ride a wave of mindfulness for 2 or 3 minutes without so much effort. And so it makes the practice in daily life much less heavy to use this, just a simple practice of noticing these moments of mindfulness returning. Using this kind of practice, what I have seen in my own life is that mindfulness can go anywhere, even including into very intense mental activity. So computer programming. I was a computer programmer for quite a long time. And there would be moments that mindfulness would return in the midst of some very intense computer programming, and it's almost like I could see the mind having created this world and see the whole kind of, it was almost like a mandala. It's like a mandala the mind had created. Could see that, could see how I was. So that I could see at times that the mindfulness could spontaneously arise in the midst of very intense mental activity. And it wasn't, it didn't add any weight to that. It wasn't heavy. It wasn't anything I was doing. It was just the mindfulness arising. And so this kind of thing can start to happen, that we see mindfulness arising in the midst of more intense interactions or intense mental functioning. And so it is not the case that mindfulness is out of bounds, let's say, during certain kinds of things that we do in our daily lives. But it does seem to be that we might not necessarily be able to do the mindfulness in some of those mental activities and actions and things that we do in our daily lives. It's more like, with athletes or musicians, as they get really good at some activity, you know, I think often there can be mindfulness in those activities or awareness. I wouldn't call it, it's not mindfulness in the sense of Buddhist mindfulness, because, like, you know, it's not directed towards understanding suffering and understanding impermanent, unreliable not-self. It's directed towards making that basketball, you know, making that shot or playing this music in this way. But there is a kind of an awareness that can come, which is not something that you're thinking about or trying to do. And so this is a possibility for mindfulness in our daily lives. But it seems to be more so that, I used that phrase at the beginning of the retreat, we are like aiming to establish mindfulness. When mindfulness becomes established, it can like go with us anywhere. It can enter into most activities of mind. There, you know, I think certain states of concentration are described as being just fully concentrated. And some descriptions I've heard is that mindfulness is not there in some of those deep states of concentration. But in most of our ordinary everyday states of mind, mindfulness can go there. But it may not be that mindfulness can go there if we're having to try to remember to do it. So that's the encouragement for noticing these moments of mindfulness returning. This is the first places that I notice the capacity for mindfulness to go into these very intense mental activities was when mindfulness spontaneously arose in the middle of them through noticing these moments of mindfulness returning. It can be helpful too, I think, occasionally to pick stretches of kind of normal everyday activities where you can recognize, I don't need to be thinking about what I'm going to do tomorrow in this, you know, in this half hour while I'm making my dinner. And, you know, that activity is very like a yogi job. And so cultivating that continuity of awareness, you know, so there are times of our day where we can actually pick up a little bit of that prompting to help ourselves get familiar with being aware in a much less structured environment. You know, you're in your kitchen and your partners or your kids or whoever comes in and talks to you, and yet you don't have to be doing anything other than being present with what is in this situation. And so you can play with that question. Wisdom, how can I be mindfulness here? If you remember, that's the hard part, remembering. So moments of awareness, recognizing moments of awareness, and maybe picking some times in your day. And some great ones to pick are like your morning ritual. You know, just getting up and making your bed, brushing your teeth, washing your face, putting your clothes on, that whatever, 15, 20 minutes, taking your shower, whatever, that 15, 20 minutes of morning ritual. You know, just have that be kind of a sacred time. This is when I can practice mindfulness. I can practice this in a more formal way. And then another thing that I have found very useful, again, is an instruction I offered for this retreat. Notice where awareness gets lost. You know, where are the rabbit holes where mindfulness doesn't go? And so you might, you know, just notice this. Just be curious. It's like, okay, where is it in my day? Where are the biggest hooks? Where do they happen? Where do the biggest hooks happen? Is it when I walk in the door of work? Is it when I get in my car? So that just begin to kind of take inventory of where it's easier to be mindful and where it's harder to be mindful. What situations? It might be certain activities that you're doing. It might be certain people that you are engaged with where it might be harder. It could be particular mind states that come up. So just kind of take inventory, not with any judgment, but just a kind of sense of curiosity. And then with that information, again, I encourage not to try to brute force your way into being mindful in those situations, but see if there can be some curiosity. Oh, when I have the, you know, when I go into this conversation with this person, there's so much that goes on, I just lose mindfulness. And so if you have an appointment, you're going to see that person, kind of bring some curiosity with you. See what happens, you know. What is it that hooks you? You know, curiosity about where it is that the mindfulness gets lost. And if you have a little bit of that curiosity going in, it's like, okay, yep, I'm walking to their office. Yep, I'm aware. Okay, yep. Oh, I feel a little bit of anxiety arising. Okay, yep, I'm aware of that. And then like 10 minutes later, oh, the last time I remember it was when I noticed the anxiety as I was heading to their office. There was a hook in there somewhere that the mindfulness got lost. And then the next time it happens, you might get a little bit further in the process. See a little bit more. Then big piece. I think I'll just going to offer two more pieces and then open to questions. One is about content, noticing how content affects us. You know, again, on retreat, we have the luxury of not having too much content. The content that we're working with is the content of our minds. And we have been encouraging a recognizing, not just like noted as thought, but how does it affect you? You know, how does it shape your mind to have had that thought? And so this is in the terrain of noticing content and how it affects you. We have to deal with content in our lives. We have to, you know, plan. We have to remember things. And so, again, if we think that dealing with content is somehow inherently non-mindful, a whole big chunk of our day goes out the window for mindfulness. So kind of a curiosity around how does the content, and Sayadaw, I don't remember if I used the phrase 50-50 mindfulness in here, did I? I used it in here. So Sayadaw talks about that, you know, 50% of the attention on what we're doing, on the content, and 50% of the attention on how we are with that experience. So a conversation or, you know, a great place to practice with this actually is reading and writing. You've practiced some with conversation here. And essentially what's happening in conversation is that, you know, you're listening to content and you're processing it, you're understanding it, you're responding to it. But hopefully in that process, you're also noticing how you are. Not only how you are with the content, but how you are with the entire situation, sitting in front of this particular person in this situation. So, you know, just that kind of awareness of the content, the situation, and how I am in that. Practicing this with reading and writing is a great place to practice with this in daily life. If you read the news, you can slow it down. It's easier than practicing in conversation because you can take it at your own speed. So you can look at a headline and stop. How did that land? How did that headline, you know, they're very evocative these days, you know. Okay, take that in. And we can, at first it might feel like it's a little bit of a back and forth. You know, that, okay, I read something and then check in. How am I with that? Okay, read the next headline. Okay, how am I with that? So you just kind of check in with how you are with the content of what is being offered. You know, when you're reading, you're taking in the contents of somebody else's mind. How does that affect you? And so, yeah, that a little bit of back and forth, but it can become more seamless with practice. This is something that does require practice, this 50-50 mindfulness. Initially, it feels like awareness out there, awareness in here, awareness out there. So it's more like, you know, 100, 100, 100, 100, out back and forth. But it does get more more seamless, where it feels more integrated, aware of the words and how you are with it as it's happening. And also, you know, in terms of practicing with content, with the content of your own minds and sharing that with other people, writing is a great way. You know, when you write something to someone, write a text or an email or something to someone, you know, how is it? As you're producing that content, how does it feel? Maybe taking the time to reflect on, and how might it land for the other person? So, you know, you can take your time with reading and writing to explore this relationship to content. And then, I said I was only going to do two more, but I'm going to pick another one. Another really useful thing. This is mostly highlighting things we've talked about all retreat, you know, just in terms of things I've seen useful in daily life. And noticing the shift of attention. You know, we talked about seeing to looking, hearing to listening, and noticing when the attention shifts in our meditation, that that's often a place where the mindfulness gets lost. As the attention shifts, we often don't quite notice it. Something has caught the mind, and the attention shifts kind of under the surface. And so as we get familiar with that experience of the shift of attention in daily life, again, it's kind of like getting familiar with the return of mindfulness. Getting familiar with that experience helps us to recognize it more. And as we get familiar with this experience of the attention shifting, it helps us to notice, you know, oh, I was like, you know, just calmly like hanging out here, and then suddenly the attention went there. It might happen through the visual field. It might happen through the auditory field. And often it happens in the mind that the mind, you know, some sight happens that produces a thought and a memory, and it's that memory that the attention goes to. Just kind of an inverting to that without our quite noticing it. So noticing that, and you could just play with at times, like taking a walk or driving. I mean, driving, you can do this in driving if your mindfulness is strong enough. But take care, you know, to notice the seeing, looking, hearing, listening. Walking, it's much safer. but it is, you know, mindfulness while driving is actually a good thing. But again, I'd say if you're doing the mindfulness while you're driving, maybe not. You know, if you're having to, oh, am I aware? What am I aware of? You know, you're it's taking away from that, the system that is kind of naturally knows how to navigate that. And so we're more interested in having the mindfulness infuse the experience of driving. And it is possible. It's actually quite lovely to have that. Then the other piece that's it's a kind of a different piece of practice. It's not so much pure mindfulness, but it's about using the capacity of our minds to think, to reflect. So we get into situations in our day, and maybe we found a kind of a rabbit hole of mindfulness during our day. And at the end of the day, we might reflect back on our day and think, wow, you know, that situation happened, and there are some regrets I have about that thing that happened. Or, you know, how might mindfulness have helped me in that situation? And so at the end of the day, when you have some space and actually can take some time, there's a form of practice that is a meditative practice that uses thought. And so it's a reflective practice. We actively bring something into our minds. And here it's the content, and it's the 50-50 mindfulness, but with something you're actively bringing into your mind. So you're bringing a scenario into your mind, something that happened during the day, for instance, bringing that into your mind. And then you don't just let your mind run and think about it, you know, just let it kind of proliferate on that. But even just 30 seconds of remembering, okay, yep, I was in the office with that person, and here's how we were, and this is what the conversation was about, that's probably enough. Feel then, you know, kind of let go of that for a moment and feel into how you are, what's arising. Because as we remember those memories, the shaping nature of mental formations, you know, the shaping nature of thoughts, the shaping nature of emotions connected to those thoughts, a lot of the times these very similar experiences arise in the moment as you're remembering that. And you can be aware of it and learn something about maybe what you missed or maybe where you got hooked in that experience. So this kind of reflective practice, to do it, it's helpful to start, you know, just kind of go into it knowing what you'd like to reflect about. And in general, this is a technique. I'm going to describe it more generally now. It's a technique that can be used for many kinds of things. it can be used to reflect on something that happened during the day, for instance, as I just described. It can be used to reflect on decisions that we might have to make, thinking about something that we might want to do in the future. Should I go that way or that way? They both seem wholesome, but, you know, what feels more resonant, kind of? And so dropping in these scenarios of the future and using the information of our system to support us in making skillful decisions. It can be used to reflect on Dharma themes, to kind of bring in a topic or a Dharma theme. And like at one point I was kind of curious about the benefit of sila, of ethical conduct, and just used that as a reflection for a couple weeks. And again, just feeling into how does this land here? You know, what does it evoke here? Not just the thinking about the concepts, but when this concept of sila and what are the benefits of sila arise here, what happens? Is there some kind of wisdom or some kind of information that comes up with that? And so this general technique can be used in so many different ways. And I learned this from Ajahn Amaro. So he suggests to start by like letting the mind settle, 5 minutes or so. Just do whatever practice really supports the settling of your mind. And then have your scenario or your question or your whatever content you want to reflect on. And again, this is not a reflection in terms of, okay, I'm going to drop this in and then I'm going to think about it. It's more like dropping it in. It's that the pond that is still, and then we drop in a pebble and it produces waves. We can hear the waves, we see the waves as we drop the pebble into the pond. And so we start with a mind that is a little bit more still, a little bit of settling in whatever way your mind settles most easily. And then after that 5 minutes or so, consciously bringing that phrase, that image, that concept into mind, that question, whatever it is. And then noticing the ripples. How does that land? How does it affect this present moment experience? You can come back to the scenario, come back to the question. And I'd say take note of what you're recognizing, but not so helpful to follow off on anything that comes up. You know, you might thoughts might arise, or emotions might arise, but don't think about those or try to follow them or figure them out. It's just like, oh, that arose in connection with that content. Oh, that arose, and maybe it feels like the pond gets a little still again, and you can bring the question back and see, you know, what's the next thing that bubbles up? What's the next thing that feels like it arises? Just do that for 5-7 minutes. And what I usually do in this kind of a practice is I'll have a pad of paper next to me. After I have done this reflection, I will take a few notes. I'll jot a few things down about what I saw, what I recognized, what I realized, just what I noticed. Just write a few notes down. And then if there's a certain, you know, if it's a longer kind of question, or, you know, something that has, is kind of a more ongoing kind of reflection, like for me with the question about what are the benefits of sila, I did that for a couple of weeks. Every day for about 15 minutes, I dropped that question into my meditation and noticed what bubbled up, and then made some notes, wrote some things down. And then after a couple of weeks, I went back to the notes. And I did a reflective practice while reading the notes. So I read through the notes. And, the very first thing that arose for me when I reflected on this, what are the benefits of sila? The very first experience that happened was loneliness arose. And that was, I had no clue what that had to do with anything. But I, you know, I wrote it down and, you know, just went through these multiple days of doing this reflection. And when I went back to it 2 weeks later and read through them, read through the notes, my mind understood and made the connection that when we do not have sila, we are disconnected from people. Loneliness is a kind of a consequence of that disconnection. And so it was a connection that I didn't make in the moment when that arose. It took, you know, kind of these days and then going back to reflect later. So, you know, this is a powerful, powerful technique to bring a meditative and a place where wisdom can kind of come in and help us to navigate some of the complexity of our lives by using a technique like this. This really is a content aware of how it affects us tool. So that's probably enough for me to start.